Hello, this is Todd Durakon with the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, April 1st, 2025, coming to you from my home studio. No, it's not an April Fool. You really have me coming to you from my home studio today. We start on the front page. Local government guiding fires to help nature. Experts use controlled burns to make way for native plants. And I'm going to start with the caption of the photo because the headline and the photo are very impressive. A crew hired by the city of Decatur conducts a prescribed burn at the Oakley Sediment Basin on Wednesday, March 26th. And the description is like with any kind of fire. There's fire and there's lots of smoke, but in the upper left of the photo, there's blue sky and clouds, and in the foreground, in and out of focus, a lot of looks like native grasses, a bit of undulation in the terrain, and the right side of the photo is covered in smoke, and the center of the photo shows the firefighter crew in front of a large reddish-orange fire. It's very, very impressive photo. Joseph Ressler Photos, Herald and Review. And I'll read the other one as well. A deer runs through the Oakley Sediment Storage Basin during a prescribed burn by the city of Decatur on Wednesday, March 26. And it looks like a young deer, a juvenile, and there are some patches on the ground where the burning has already occurred. And the deer appears to be safe, but it's a very sweet photo. Now on to the article. This article is by Donette Beckett, Macon County. Fields and woodland areas get a special dose of medicine through prescribed fires. The areas are issued a controlled burn for their health as well as the health of other vegetation. But don't try this at home. It's a three-page prescription, said Shane Ravalette, watershed specialist with the city of Decatur. Prescribed fires, previously referred to as controlled burns, are aimed at controlling unwanted vegetation while promoting the native stuff, said Mitch Lovergren, natural resources manager for the Macon County Conservation District. The process of burning these areas isn't the same as burning leaves or grass patches, the certified professionals say. Fire has its own behavior, Lovergren said. Once you get it on the ground and it takes off, you're not going to control it. It does its thing. The city of Decatur recently conducted three prescribed burns near the Lake Decatur Dam and two near the other end of the lake, around the city's sediment basin in Oakley and an area west of Star Route Road and north of Reese Bridge Road. One of the recent burns was conducted by a six-member crew with 50 combined years of experience, Ravalette said. There were four certified burn managers on that burn, he added. Our protective clothing and gear cost almost $1,000 per person, and on that burn, almost $70,000 worth of equipment was used to ensure a safe and productive burn. Prescribed fire management certification takes 100 to 150 hours of study and experience to achieve. Lovergren and his crew continue to take courses to stay updated on their certification. It's everything from the command options when you're on a fire to smoke management to how to saw the stuff that's been on fire, he said. There's a whole suite of courses that they offer that all revolve around the prescribed fire program. Prescribed fires are an efficient way for crews to maintain the native vegetation, said Brett Oxley, certified burn manager and golf course superintendent at Redtail Golf Course. We're burning prairie grass that has grown up to be 4 or 5 feet tall, he said. Oxley recently received his certification as a burn manager. In the past, the Decatur Park District partnered with the Macon County Conservation District to schedule a prescribed fire. We get the burns done that we need to get done when the weather's right, Oxley said about using available resources. There's a short window. Weather, including wind, humidity, and temperature is part of the planning process. A partnership with the National Weather Service in Lincoln is important. Typically, you need a light wind, 5 to 10 miles per hour, to be able to help push that smoke up and away, Oxley said. Two burn seasons, one in the spring and the other in the fall, are weather dependent. Other variables can determine when and where to burn. The spring season can bring warmer weather, drawing out small reptiles, animals, and birds, which will be protected. The farmers and their standing crops or residue may affect the fall season. In most burn seasons in the spring, about 5 to 10 good burn days is what we get, Lovegren said. If there's a burn advisory, we don't burn. Macon County Conservation District crews focus on prairies and forests. The only way that we keep them the way that they are is by having fire go through them, Lovegren said. Over time, if you don't burn them, they will slowly lose their oak and hickory components. The management conducts prescribed burns for various reasons. Our landscape in Illinois is adapted to fire, Revelette said. The vegetative species that we want to live in central Illinois are used to fire. The tall grasses, oaks, and hickory trees need the element of fire to thrive, Revelette said. We're trying to encourage something that should be happening, he added. The vegetation that is unwanted in the area doesn't like fire. By burning things on a routine basis, we can prevent those species from taking over our native plants, Revelette said. Bush honeysuckle is one of the most invasive plants dominating the local woodland areas. It blocks out the sunlight from the forest floor. Oak trees and hickory trees don't want to grow, Revelette said, and it also causes bare ground in the forest floor, which is bad for erosion. Prescribed fires are common at the Oakley Sediment Basin. Problem species include phragmites or common reed. The plant has thick stalks and grows to nearly 9 feet. It's very hard to eradicate with herbicides, Revelette said. The common reed burns can cause a dark smoke because of the thick yet hollow stems and dense growth. So dense that you almost cannot walk through it, Revelette said. Millions of those stalks cover nearly 400 acres, according to Revelette. The fire burns so hot and fast that each hollow stem acts like a tiny chimney, accelerating the heat. It sucks all of the localized oxygen out of the air, and the plant material doesn't burn completely and turns into small pieces of black, but not on fire, charcoal that the hot air lifts up, he added. According to Oxley, the spring season is ideal for prescribed fires. You're actually producing less smoke by burning it in the spring, he said. The growing point of the plant has gone into dormancy, and the growth from last year has dried out enough. And some very impressive black and white photos. Wow, this one, this medium one, shows a billowing clouds of dust almost rolling above the tops of the prairie grass, and that's all you can see. And it's black and white. It's very, very impressive, very striking. Joseph Ressler photos, Herald and Review. And finally, a small black and white photo showing just scorched earth, black, very flat, some texture. Plant materials charred after a prescribed burn on the lawn of the Decatur Park District, Nelson Park, on Wednesday, March 26th. Very interesting article. We now move on to Election Day. Macon County sees a few open seats. Scott Perry, Decatur. Voters in Niantic and Harristown have choices to make Tuesday, April 1st, when they go to the polls. Voters in both communities have a contested race for school board, while voters in Harristown will elect a new mayor and in Niantic a new village president. In the Sangamon Valley School District, there are four available seats. Incumbents Joshua Hilbert, Matt Wood, Jessica Browning, and Lori Campbell are being challenged by Tara Floyd. In Harristown, Les Jenkins and Stephen Shepard are running for mayor. Current mayor Evelyn Deverell isn't seeking re-election. In Niantic, Alicia Matic and Jeff Kepler, a current board member, are running for village president. Robert Emery isn't seeking re-election. Polls open at 6 a.m. and close at 7 p.m. In addition to school boards and municipal positions, the election also fills spots on community, college, township, library, park, and fire district boards. Elsewhere in Macon County, there are three contested school board races and three communities with contested trustee council races. In the Decatur School District, there are six candidates for four available seats. Incumbent Jason Dion is being challenged by Karen Lauritsen, Tony Albertina, Kevin Hale, Christina Tias, and Devin Martinez Joyner. Current board members Alana Banks, Kevin Collins, and Al Schneider are not seeking re-election. In the Mount Zion School District, there are four candidates for three available seats: incumbents Michelle Shoemaker and Kyle Janvrin, and being challenged by Marcy Rocky and Eric Law. Current board member Nathan Brock isn't seeking re-election. In the Meridian School District, there are five candidates for four available seats, and none of them are current board members. The candidates are Nicole Sloniker, Matthew Trimble, Samantha Murray, Jill Parton, and Joseph Lash. Monty Hogan, Chris Jones, Clint Gordon, and Adam Herbert aren't seeking re-election. There is no candidate for a two-year unexpired term. On the municipal side of the ballot, there also are contested races in Decatur, Forsyth, and Long Creek. In Decatur, there are five candidates for three seats. Incumbents Ed Culp and David Horn are being challenged by Micah Ray, Jim Wrigley, and Consuelo Cruz. Chuck Cooley is not seeking re-election. In Forsyth, there are six candidates for three commissioner seats. Incumbent Dave Wendt is being challenged by Michael Doherty, Jim Ashby, Tom Cantwell, Michael Brown, and Chelsea Kitt. Bob Grunewald and Marilyn Johnson aren't seeking re-election. In Long Creek, incumbents Dan Clow, Matt Niesman, and Michelle Comer are seeking re-election. John Thomas has filed to be a write-in candidate. As of 9 a.m. Monday, Macon County Clerk Josh Tanner reported 952 residents have voted in person early, and another 1,695 have cast their votes by mail. Tanner said voters who are not registered are encouraged to come to the Early Voting Center, 151 West Wood Street, to register and vote on Tuesday. To do so, Tanner said the applicants must have two forms of identification, one with their current address. A driver's license and a piece of mail are the most common forms used. Other forms of ID include a college or university identification, copy of a lease, social security card, or utility bill. Tanner also noted that if a voter has requested a vote by a mail ballot and they have received the ballot, they must surrender the ballot if they want to vote in person. Anyone with questions can call 217-424-1333. Here's a cool music story. The band Perry on Devon lineup. Donette Beckett Decatur has this article. Country act The Band Perry has been added to the Devon Lakeshore Amphitheater summer concert lineup. The tour will stop by the Nelson Park venue in Decatur on July 27th and feature special guest the Henningsons. Tickets ranging from $25 to $50 will be available beginning at 10 a.m. Wednesday, April 2nd at the devonamphitheater.com website. The show will be part of the 2025 Devon season ticket package. The band Perry is made up of siblings Kimberly Reed and Neil Perry. So that's three of them, Kimberly Reed and Neil Perry. Their first hit, If I Die Young, reached number one in the U.S. Billboard Hot Country Songs and Hot Adult Contemporary Tracks by 2010. Additional numbers, number one singles, Better Dig 2 and Done, hit the charts 3 years later. After a hiatus, the band has returned to the stage with its current tour, The Band Perry, A Homecoming. For more information, visit the Devon Amphitheater website or Facebook page. Harlem Wizards to play in Clinton. This article is by Olivia Jacobs Clinton. The Harlem Wizards basketball team will play against the Vault All-Stars, made up of Clinton teachers and community leaders, at 6:30 p.m. Thursday, April 17th. The game will be held at the Clinton Junior High School Gymnasium, 701 Illini Drive in Clinton. This event marks the Vault Community Center's largest fundraiser of the year. Kids who wear a Wizards jersey will be able to join the team for a pregame WizKids warm-ups, and audience members will have the chance to participate throughout the game. At the end of the game, all students will be invited to join the Wizards on the court for an end-of-night dance celebration. There will also be comedy, slam dunks, merchandise giveaways, contests, and more. Tickets are $40 for courtside and include a pregame meet and greet with Wizards players. Reserve seats are $25, general admission is $15, and student admission is $12. Tickets can be purchased online at pretix.eu/Harlem Wizards/Clinton IL04-17-25-06-30 PM. Moving on to the local and state, on A3, man arrested after high-speed chase. Donette Beckett Decatur has this article. A 27-year-old Decatur man was arrested Sunday after police say they were led on a high-speed chase in response to a 911 call about a domestic violence incident. According to Sergeant Steve Carroll, Decatur police officers were dispatched at approximately 2:30 p.m. Sunday to the 1700 block of East Lawrence Street to a report of a man restraining a woman outside of a home. Another witness did say they saw the suspect slap the victim, Carroll said. Before police arrived, the man and woman had left in the residence in a green Dodge Charger, which police were able to locate. We were in vehicle pursuit that went above 100 miles per hour, Carroll said. The vehicle disobeyed multiple traffic devices. Police were able to locate the vehicle in the area of Leafland Avenue and Union Street. The woman was standing outside of the vehicle while the man was found walking a block away. He was taken into custody on preliminary charges of unlawful restraint and aggravated fleeing, among others. The woman was treated at a local hospital for minor injuries. Police gunfired during argument. Tony Reed, Decatur. A Decatur woman is now lodged in the Macon County Jail after police said she pulled a gun on her boyfriend during an argument and pumped two bullets into the wall of her own home. A sworn affidavit filed by Decatur Police Department said Robriel E. Conley, 23, shot the rounds at the wall near the front door, knowing her boyfriend had just gone inside the house in the 900 block of East Johns Avenue. The affidavit said Conley had been having an argument with the boyfriend on the afternoon of March 25th. She was sitting at the wheel of her car, and he was standing outside the driver's window. He walked away and went inside the front door and closed the door behind him, said the affidavit signed by Officer Joshua Davis. Conley then fired approximately two shots from her Taurus 9mm pistol at the front wall, directly next to the front door, knowing he was just inside the door. Conley was arraigned in Macon County Circuit Court on March 26th, and Judge Lindsay Shelton ruled she was too dangerous to be granted pretrial release. The defendant is charged with the aggravated discharge of a firearm at an occupied building and is due back in court for a preliminary hearing April 9th when she will enter a plea. Argument ends in vehicle assault. Decatur, Tony Reed has this article. Nearly 2 years ago, in a rapidly escalating 22-minute fit of rage, police say a Decatur woman went from slapping a cell phone out of her boyfriend's hand to poking him in the head with her finger and then driving her car at him. A sworn affidavit filed by the Decatur Police Department said that all happened on the afternoon of July 4th, 2022, and the defendant, Aaliyah B. Reed, had been wanted on a warrant ever since. Police patrols finally caught up with her in the early hours of March 24th when she was found and arrested. The affidavit said Reed, 30, and her boyfriend had gotten into an argument at an address in the 2200 block of East Olive Street at 1:15 p.m. when she slapped the phone out of his hand. By 1:20 p.m., the couple, who have dated for four years and share two children, were continuing the argument at a garage in the 1400 block of North 22nd Street. Reed used her index finger to poke the 33-year-old boyfriend in the head several times, said the affidavit. And at 1:37 p.m., the couple had shifted to the parking lot of a liquor store in the 1300 block of North 22nd Street. This time, the boyfriend was standing in the lot, and the police said Reed was at the wheel of a Nissan Cube vehicle. The boyfriend stood in the middle of this parking lot, and Reed intentionally drove in his direction two times. Reed struck him one time, the affidavit said. The incident was witnessed by a 29-year-old woman bystander and caught on videotape, police say. I'm guessing it wasn't actually videotape, but that's what it says. The recording shows the boyfriend suffering lacerations on his left index finger and right forearm after he was whacked by the vehicle's driver side mirror, which broke off and was later recovered from the parking lot. The boyfriend walked with a noticeable limp and said he twisted his ankle in an attempt to escape being run over by Reed, the affidavit said. Reed appeared in Macon County Circuit Court on March 24th to be arraigned on a charge of committing aggravated battery with a deadly weapon. A request by prosecutors to keep Reed in custody was denied by Judge Lindsay Shelton, who granted the defendant pretrial release. Reed will be back in court for a preliminary hearing April 9th when she will enter a plea. Police targeting distracted drivers. Tony Reed, Decatur. Police have a simple text message for drivers during April's Distracted Driving Awareness Month. Put the phone away or pay. That is great advice. People need to heed that warning and notice advice. Sergeant Steve Hagemeyer with the Decatur Police Department says his agency is working with more than 200 police forces in a bid to make the roads of Illinois safer by ticketing distracted drivers. Distracted driving is dangerous, claiming 58 lives in Illinois in 2023, Hagemeyer said in a news release. We need everyone's support in making our roads safer, which includes staying focused behind the wheel. We're excited to support the Illinois Department of Transportation's efforts in educating all road users about the importance of putting your phone away, setting your navigation before your trip begins, and having a distraction-free driving. Hagemeyer says it is a common sight to see people driving and checking their phones. But in April, he added, stepped-up police patrols will be out and checking on the drivers themselves. During April, you will see increased law enforcement efforts as officers stop and ticket anyone who violates distracted driving and other Illinois motor vehicle laws, he added. Good. And the crime of the week. Decatur police seek stolen Jeep. Donette Beckett, Decatur. The Decatur Police Department needs the public's help in solving a vehicle theft this week's crime of the week. According to a news release issued by Officer Tucker Toole with the Decatur Police Department, officers were contacted in response to an incident that happened about 9 a.m. on March 24th when a victim briefly parked a red Jeep Cherokee in the 700 block of West Macon Street. As the victim stepped away from the vehicle, an identified male suspect approached the unattended car, Toole stated. The suspect entered the driver's seat of the Jeep and drove away westbound from the scene. Photographs of the suspect as well as the vehicle can be viewed on the Macon County Crime Stoppers website under the Crime of the Week tab. Anyone with information on this theft should call Crime Stoppers at 217-423-TIPS. Crime Stoppers will pay $500 or more for information that leads to an arrest on the Crime of the Week. Here's an interesting article that's on the weather page, which will end on St. Augustine. So it's called Sunny Place to Play and Work. St. Augustine, a 1500s city evolving into a remote work hotspot. Mike Schneider, Associated Press, St. Augustine, Florida. Lori Mathias and her husband, tired of Atlanta traffic, moved to St. Augustine, Florida in 2023. For Mike Waldron and his wife, moving from the Boston area in 2020, to a place that bills itself as the nation's oldest city, was motivated by their desire to be closer to their adult children. They were among thousands of white-collar remote workers who migrated to the St. Augustine area in recent years, transforming the touristy beach town into one of the top remote work hubs in the United States. Mathias fell in love with St. Augustine's small-town feel, trading the hour-long commute she had in Atlanta for bumping into friends and acquaintances while running errands. The whole pace here is slower, and I'm attracted to that, said Mathias, who does sales and marketing for a power tool company. My commute is like 30 steps from my kitchen to my office. It's just different. It's just relaxed and friendly. Centuries before becoming a remote work hub, the St. Augustine area was claimed by the Spanish crown in the 16th century, after explorer Juan Ponce de León's arrival. In modern times, it is best known for its Spanish architecture of terracotta roofs and arched doorways, tourist-carrying trolleys, a historic fort, an alligator farm, lighthouses, and a shipwreck museum. In St. John's County, home to St. Augustine, the percentage of workers who did their jobs from home nearly tripled from 8.6% in 2018 to almost 24% in 2023, moving the Northeast Florida county into the top ranks of U.S. counties with the largest share of people working remotely, according to U.S. Census Bureau figures. Only counties with a heavy presence of tech, finance, and government workers in Metro Washington, Atlanta, Austin, Charlotte, and Dallas, as well as two counties in North Carolina's Research Triangle, had a larger share of their workforce working from home. Those counties were much more populous than the 335,000 residents in St. John's County, which has grown by more than a fifth during this decade. Scott Maynard, a vice president of economic development for the county's Chamber of Commerce, attributes the initial influx of new residents to Florida's lifting of COVID-19 restrictions in businesses and schools in the fall of 2020, while much of the country remained locked down. A lot of people were relocating here from the Northeast, the Midwest, and California, so that their children could get back to face-to-face education, Maynard said. That brought in a tremendous number of people who had the ability to work remotely and wanted their children back in a face-to-face situation in school. Public schools in St. Johns County are among the best in Florida, according to an annual report card by the State Department of Education. The influx of new residents brought growing pains, particularly when it comes to affordable housing, since many of the new remote workers moving into the area are wealthier than locals and able to outbid them on homes, officials said. Many essential workers, such as police officers, firefighters, and teachers, were forced to commute from outside St. Johns County because of rising housing costs. The median home price grew from $405,000 in 2019 to almost $535,000 in 2023, according to Census Bureau figures, making the purchase of a home further out of reach for the county's essential workers. Essential workers would need to earn at least $180,000 annually to afford the median price of a home in St. Johns County, but a teacher has an average salary of about $48,000, and a law enforcement officer earns about $58,000 on average, according to an analysis by the local Chamber of Commerce. What happened was a lot of the people, especially coming in from up north, were able to sell their homes for such a high value and come here and just pay cash since this seemed affordable to them, said Alaya Meyer, an economic researcher at the Chamber of Commerce. So it kind of inflated the market and put a bit of constraint on the local residents. Waldron, a sales executive in the healthcare industry, was able to sell his Boston home at the height of the pandemic and purchase a 3-bedroom, 2-bath home in a gated community by a golf course outside St. Augustine, where things really worked out to be less expensive down here. The flexibility offered by fast wireless internet and the popularity of online meeting platforms since the start of the pandemic also helped. If I was still locked in an office, Waldron said, I would not have been able to move down here. And the first thing I notice is the large color photo. Pedestrians make their way March 13th through the historic downtown district in St. Augustine, Florida. And the fort behind, very beautiful sky, palm trees, all noticed here in the photo. Mike Schneider, Photos, Associated Press. Alaya Meyer, an official with the St. Johns County Chamber of Commerce, walked through a downtown neighborhood March 13th in St. Augustine, Florida. And healthcare sales executive Mike Waldron works out of his home office March 13th in St. Augustine, Florida. And let's wrap up this first half hour with the Decatur 4-day forecast. Today, breezy in the afternoon, evening, wind east-southeast 10 to 20 miles per hour, high of 55. Tonight, rain and a thunderstorm, wind southeast 12 to 25 miles per hour, low of 49. Wednesday, showers and thunderstorms, wind south-southwest 15 to 25 miles per hour. Wednesday, the high on Wednesday is 71 and the low is 46. Thursday, rain and a thunderstorm, wind northwest 6 to 12 miles per hour, high of 57 and low of 46. Friday, rain, a thunderstorm, wind northeast 8 to 16 miles per hour, high of 62 and low of 48. Regional outlook, overcast today. Breezy during the afternoon, little or no sunshine with average relative humidity 55% and fair drying conditions. Rain and a thunderstorm tonight. Storms can bring hail and damaging winds. Well, that brings us to the end of the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, April 1st, 2025. We'll take a short break and return with the second half hour.